Notice was sent, not to the applicant, but to his father. "Your son has been admitted to Harvard College," wrote the dean of freshmen, Delmar Layton, to Joseph P. Kennedy in July 1950. He scribbled in a postscript, "Happy to be sending you another of these letters." Kennedy, a Harvard alumnus and benefactor, took the university's admittance of his 18-year-old son, Edward, as his due. At 61, the patriarch was extraordinarily wealthy. After a rollicking career as a Wall Street tycoon, diplomat, Hollywood studio chief, real estate mogul, purveyor of forbidden liquor, and advisor to President Franklin Roosevelt. "I suppose it would almost be a sacrilege," Kennedy wrote back, "not to have the last of the Kennedy boys attend the school where his father and brothers went." The Corsair closed his letter with cajolery. Someday he might need Layton's help again. "It's a rather difficult job today to be dean of freshmen at a college like Harvard, with all the problems that the youths of today have to face," Kennedy wrote. "We are delighted that Teddy is in your hands." Unspoken but known to both was Harvard's expansive criteria for accepting Edward Moore Kennedy to the class of 1954. It wasn't because his academic record showed flair. Like so much in his life, it had to do with family. The university was a place where clans like the Adamses, Roosevelts, and Lodges sent their sons, prodigies, rakes, and dolts alike, to be certified for rank and lives of privilege. Even in the 1950s, when the leveling effects of World War II were strong and programs for young veterans like the GI Bill democratized the yards of the Ivy League, Harvard preserved its traditional allotment of each year's class for boys of wealth and stature. 90% of the applicants from the better prep schools and an equal proportion of the sons of Harvard alumni were admitted in 1950. College administrators called them the gentlemen, or, with smiles they shared among themselves, the paying guests. Along the red brick walks of Cambridge, on the Gold Coast of Mount Auburn Street, in clubs with names like Spee or Fly, the gentleman C was respectable. In some of the clubhouses or athlete suites, where eggheads and day students grinding for grades might find themselves the subject of mockery, academic indifference was a mark of honor. Yet there were always a few of the legacy sort who, for lack of effort or talent or temperament, would come to ill-starred ends, face suspension, and place the school in an awkward position. Layton sought, in his letter to Joseph Kennedy, to head this off. "While we believe that no students have been admitted to Harvard who do not have the capacity to do good college work, the transition to university conditions is not always easily made," wrote the tactful dean. "We ask for your cooperation in notifying us if you have reason to believe your son is having difficulty. Write us about him, as fully as you are willing, with references to his individual qualities and needs," the dean urged Kennedy. "In case he has deficiencies in his earlier education or weaknesses in character or health, we ought to know about it." In fact, there was reason for Joseph to believe that Edward Kennedy, Ted or Teddy, sometimes Eddie, to family and pals, might find the transition difficult. It's not that Ted was not gifted. Far from it. The last of the Kennedy boys was tall and handsome, with a robust physique, arboreal quads, a million-dollar grin, and an exuberant sense of humor. His thick, wavy, dark brown hair would last a lifetime, and the mighty Irish jaw was assertive, if prone to be enveloped in times of plenty by the chipmunk cheeks of the Fitzgeralds, his maternal line. His eyes were expressive, not probing like his older brother John's, but vulnerable and eloquent in times of sorrow. He was a warm, playful human being who loved dogs, good times, song, and devilry. "To find Ted Kennedy, listen for the laughter," a friend of his would say. He said his prayers and went to church, a Sermon on the Mount, not a Ten Commandments Catholic. He was more than intelligent, but no intellectual. His brother John called Ted a gay illiterate. When motivated, most notably by his father's prodding, he'd invest the needed hours in the study halls and carols. As the last of 9 children, he had sometimes been coddled, but often neglected. He knew loneliness, having spent much of his childhood shuttled off to boarding schools. By the time he got to Harvard, he had attended 10 different schools. Or was it 9? Or 11? His mother could sometimes not remember. The experience left him unsure. He stumbled over words, a cognitive tell. He did better when rehearsed, and he knew it. Throughout his life, he would compensate via intense preparation and relentless effort. It made for an intricate and complex character, that marvelous affability joined with drive and perseverance, insecurities addressed by toil, and anxiety salved by self-indulgence. He would spend that life seeking to catch up to his siblings. The disadvantage of my position is being constantly compared with brothers of such superior ability, he would say.